Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the dramatic exodus of thousands of Syrian refugees flooding across the border into Iraqi Kurdistan. David Phillips, the director of the Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University, joins us to discuss the sudden outpouring of thousands of people across the Tigris River on a pontoon bridge for reasons that are not clear to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees Agency trying to deal with the situation. Then we look into how the crisis in Egypt is seen in the broader Middle East and the role of outside players like the Saudis who support the Egyptian military and the Qataris who support the Muslim Brotherhood. Gregory Gulls, professor of political science at the University of Vermont and author of The International Relations of the Persian Gulf, joins us to discuss the growing alienation young Islamists feel about what they see as hypocritical Western concepts of democracy. Finally, we'll be joined by Yusuf Ibrahim, Egyptian-born columnist and who served for 18 years as the senior regional Middle East correspondent for The New York Times and for 6 years as energy editor for The Wall Street Journal. We will discuss the recent attacks on Christian Coptic churches by Muslim Brotherhood supporters and the difficult diplomatic position the United States government finds itself in with the Egyptian military. Joining us now is David Phillips, the director of the Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University and the author of Losing Iraq Inside the Post-War Reconstruction Fiasco. He has worked as a senior advisor to the United Nations Secretariat and as a foreign affairs expert and senior advisor to the United States Department of State. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Phillips.
Thank you.
And what is happening on the border between Syria and Iraqi Kurdistan, where 10,000 people crossed this shaky pontoon bridge across the Tigris River on Saturday, and the day before, 7,000 crossed. I don't know what the figures are today, but the UNHCR, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, don't seem to know why people are suddenly flooding out of Syria into Iraqi Kurdistan.
There are a couple of reasons for this. First, the desperation of Syrians. They're running out of food, medicine, there's no work. Secondly, these refugees are almost entirely Kurds from Syria. They include a few Christians among them. And the reason why they are fleeing is because of the increased violence between the Al-Nusra Front, which is a Sunni Arab terrorist organization, and the Kurdish populations. In fact, the Al-Nusra Front recently issued a fatwa saying that Kurds were infidels and legitimizing the killing of Kurdish men, women, and children. So it's understandable that as soon as this pontoon bridge was operational, Iraqi Kurds went across the border to Iraqi Kurdistan for protection and for provisions.
So this is the Al-Nusra Front. This is the group that, in effect, the Saudis are supporting, right? I mean, these are the Salafists that have poured in, and they seem to be doing most of the fighting from what we understand. And curiously enough, I've been reading reports more recently, David Phillips, that indicate that the Assad regime essentially don't fight so hard against al-Nusra. They don't shell them and use their aircraft against them, but they beat up on the Free Syrian Army. So is this a part of the overall cynical mess that we have here, that in a curious way the Assad regime want it to appear that this is that they're fighting the al-Nusra Front and not the Free Syrian Army?
Most of the fighting on the ground is between Assad forces and the Free Syrian Army. The Assad forces really don't want to confront the al-Nusra fighters because these are battle-hardened warriors. There are also a lot of foreign fighters among them. And al-Nusra has been identified as a foreign terrorist organization by the U.S. government. They're being funded by the Saudis and the Qataris. Weapons are being transported in Ukrainian airplanes that are flying out of bases in Turkey. You know, the al-Nusra Front is a terror group which is targeting Kurds, Assad supporters, and has really radicalized and polarized the situation in Syria. I think it's put the Kurds in a position where they have to choose between either going across the border into Iraqi Kurdistan, staying in Syria where they are going to be ruled by Assad, who is a dictator, or under the thumb of al-Nusra, a terrorist organization. That's really between a rock and a hard place for the Kurds of Syria and the other minorities.
Well, you were saying a minute ago, David Phillips, that as far as the al-Nusra Salafists are concerned, the Kurds are heretics, right? They feel the same way about the Alawites, that because they believe in the Trinity. They really consider them heretics too. And haven't there been some clashes between the Syrian Kurdish Peshmerga, I guess, if that's what they call themselves, and al-Nusra?
Well, there sure have been a lot of clashes as of late between the DYP and its Peshmerga. These are Syrian Kurds that are spiritually aligned with the PKK in Turkey and al-Nusra. What's clear is that the U.S. is pursuing a policy of trying to bring groups together for a Geneva conference. It looks as though the only people who will come to the Geneva conference are the moderate Syrian opposition. There's no special outreach to the Kurds of Syria. The Alawites don't want to participate because they're sitting on the fence. And when you have a peace conference, you have to have the parties to the conflict involved. Iran has said that it won't attend, and if it won't attend, then it's likely that the Damascus regime won't either. So we put all this effort into pursuing a policy to have a Geneva conference, and it's there's very little likelihood that that's going to happen. We should be pursuing a policy that's focused on the minorities in Syria, namely the Kurds, who have proven in the region to be our best and only friends, the Christians, and other minorities who, in the long run, will be more amenable to working with the West.
Again, I'm speaking with David Phillips, who's the director of the Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University and the author of Losing Iraq: Inside the Post-War Reconstruction Fiasco. He has worked as a senior advisor to the United Nations Secretariat and as a foreign affairs expert and senior advisor to the United States Department of State. Now, when you mentioned earlier that one of the things that's motivating this sudden exodus of thousands of Syrians, mostly Kurds, crossing this shaky pontoon bridge across the Tigris River into Iraqi Kurdistan, that they're fleeing not just the violence from the Salafist al-Nusra Front, but also from starvation. So, and most of them are coming from the northern part of Syria, which is the so-called liberated zone. So that would indicate that there's something dreadfully wrong happening there in the liberated zone if the people are starving. My understanding on the Assad side, he's still keeping the population loyal to him. Apparently they're still being fed in spite of the war. So is this to do with the clashes between this Free Syrian Army and al-Nusra, that this is sort of a no man's land? Why isn't there any humanitarian aid getting into this part of Syria to the extent that people are starving?
Assad's withdrawn his forces, essentially giving the Kurds in the Qamishli area between Aleppo and Qamishli a free rein. The Kurds who have guns are affiliated with the DYP. They're now being targeted by the al-Nusra Front. The fact that there's no international humanitarian assistance going to this belt on the border has aggravated an already difficult situation for the minorities that are living there. It should also be noted, Ian, that the U.S. is giving lots of money to the UNHCR to provide humanitarian relief, but that money is going almost entirely to UNHCR operations in countries like Jordan. Why aren't we resourcing the Kurdistan Regional Government, which is responsible for providing safe haven to these refugees so that they can do the job better. The Kurdistan Regional Government has already set up reception centers in Erbil and Sulaymaniyah. They're paying for it entirely themselves. There's no international assistance coming. And the U.S. should be having a policy which is focused on reaching out to the Kurds, providing assistance to the Kurds in Iraqi Kurdistan so that they can meet the humanitarian needs of these refugees, and then resourcing the Kurds and other minorities along this belt in Syria so that the conditions that are driving them across the border can be addressed.
So is this because this is happening suddenly, or is this because the U.S. and the UNHCR dropped the ball?
The influx of refugees is happening suddenly because the pontoon bridge has been established. But this is the product of a misguided policy which has been in place for some months. The U.S. needs to focus on minorities. Among those minorities, principally Kurds in Syria, who are the only Syrians who in the long run who will be friendly to Western interests. Because the Iraqi Kurds are providing a critical role, playing a critical role with humanitarian assistance, we should be resourcing the Kurdistan Regional Government so they can do their job better. Of course, we want to have a Geneva conference, but we need to focus on a minorities policy, because at the end of the day, those are the only Syrians who are going to talk to the United States.
So, obviously, the Iraqi Kurdistan is the only part of Iraq, of post-Bush-Cheney war Iraq, that's working. And I've been trying to cover what's happening in Iraq recently with this increasing numbers of casualties and a resumption, if you will, of the civil war. It seems that things are only going to get worse between the Sunni and the Shia, and perhaps a civil war will resume. Meanwhile, in the north, you seem to have a state that's working, but of course, Turkey and Kurdistan have always been at odds. And so, I know it's a complicated mosaic here, but give us a sense of are the Turks not being cooperative in this refugee issue? My understanding is there's quite a lot of business being done now between Iraqi Kurdistan and Turkey.
Yeah, the one bright spot here is the rapprochement that's occurred between Turkey and the Kurdistan region of Iraq. There's all kinds of commercial contact. Turkish businesses are there in a big way. There's a lot of money that's being made. Oil and gas, which is being developed in Iraqi Kurdistan, is finding its way through pipelines via Turkey to the port of Ceyhan in the eastern Mediterranean. So there is good cooperation between Turkey and Iraqi Kurdistan, including in security areas. Where there is no cooperation is between Baghdad and Erbil, which is the capital of the Kurdistan Regional Government. When you have refugees across the border into Iraqi Kurdistan, it's the responsibility of the Iraqi government to provide for them. Not a penny is coming from Baghdad. All of the resources are coming from the Kurdistan region. Meanwhile, when the Obama administration essentially surrendered the status of forces agreement that would have allowed a nominal U.S. presence ongoing in Iraq, we surrendered the country to extremist Shia and Sunni. Now we have a government in Baghdad which is a proxy of Iran. We have a country which is infiltrated by Arab extremists who are Sunni. There's increased sectarian violence. Iraq is almost back to the levels of civil war that we saw in 2006 before the surge. So we have a sectarian division in Syria which is being mirrored in Iraq and now in Lebanon, and a belt of instability pitting Sunni against Shia in this arc of conflict that stretches from Beirut all the way to Baghdad.
And this picture that you've just drawn is likely to get worse, is it not?
It's likely to get worse because you have deep historical and cultural and religious animosities that exist among Muslim factions. And without the U.S. there to play a stabilizing role, we've essentially abandoned Iraqis to fight it out amongst themselves. The bastion of stability in all of this is the Kurdistan region. That's why we should be investing there. If Kurds and other minorities from Syria are crossing this pontoon bridge to the Kurdistan region of Iraq, we need to be assisting with their resettlement. We should also be working to strengthen the cooperation between Turkey and the Kurdistan region of Iraq instead of opposing it.
So how, just in closing, David Phillips, what's your understanding of how much the administration is engaged here? I mean, this is happening all of a sudden, this outpouring of refugees from the Syrian Kurdish area into Iraqi Kurdistan. But in general, it appears that there's a sort of confusion on, you know, the Russians, the Iranians, and the Assad government seem to know exactly what they want. And Russia's not going to cooperate with us as long as they think that Assad's winning. We don't seem to know what the hell to do with al-Nusra and the Free Syrian Army and who to give arms to, etc. And you're telling us now that the only people that we could actually work with in that neighborhood that don't hate us are the Iraqi Kurds and the Syrian Kurds. What's your sense of whether the administration has a grip on this?
They're deeply involved. They're providing a lot of money for humanitarian assistance. That money is going through the UN, which is focusing its efforts in countries like Jordan. We should be working directly with conflict-affected populations. And instead of trying to placate our enemies, we should be rewarding our friends. That's something that the Iranians and the Russians have learned and are doing in the region. If the United States is going to be a player and is going to preserve its interests through the minorities in Syria and the Kurds in Iraq and in cooperation with Turkey, we have to pursue a policy where we know who is a reliable ally, and we need to reward them. Security assistance, humanitarian and development assistance, and political and diplomatic support.
And is there any parity, though, between how much we've got our act together in the West and how much Russia, Iran, and Assad has their act together? I mean, this thing could go on for years, couldn't it?
Yeah, this is a grinding conflict, and there's no end in sight. The Russians and the Iranians have a dog in this fight. They're supporting their proxies. The U.S., meanwhile, is still trying to take an even-handed approach. We can't be balanced in pursuit of loyalties. We have to recognize who our friends are, and we need to reward them.
Well, David Phillips, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with David Phillips, the director of the Peace Building and Rights Program at the Institute for the Study of Human Rights at Columbia University and the author of Losing Iraq: Inside the Post-War Reconstruction Fiasco. He has worked as a senior advisor to the United Nations Secretariat and as a foreign affairs expert and senior advisor to the United States Department of State. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the role of Saudi Arabia in supporting the military government in Egypt.